Hello, this is Dr. Carol Myers from the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Welcome to Health Connections, the show about people, health, and policy. Recent episodes, Brandon and I have covered brain science. We looked at what you can do to promote brain health. We've looked at brain science specifically in concepts like neuroplasticity and how brain science can facilitate us being more successful in keeping New Year and other resolutions. We've mentioned mindfulness several times in our discussions, and we heard from listeners who wanted to hear more about mindfulness, so today is the day. Before I go any further, I want to welcome our two guests, Drs. John Blackburn and Cliff Tennyson. John has practiced meditation for over 45 years. He teaches classes year-round and leads a weekly meditation group here in Knoxville. Dr. Cliff Tennyson began his mindfulness practice 48 years ago. And after 33 years as a community psychiatrist, he recently retired as the vice president and chief clinical officer of Helen Ross McNabb Center here in Knoxville. He is now pursuing his passion for teaching meditation skills by educating healthcare providers and other community groups on the neurosciences of mindfulness practices. Many people are converging on the topic of mindfulness. They get to mindfulness, though, by very different paths. Some people are attracted by the health benefits of mindfulness. Some want a proven distressor or a place away from the distractions of our high-paced, highly connected lifestyles. Some people combine mindfulness with other practices such as yoga. Gentlemen, how would you define mindfulness? What is it?
Meditation and mindfulness are not equal. Mm-hmm. Meditation is the primary way, probably the most important way, to achieve mindfulness. But of course, we can be mindful in any moment. We can be mindful washing the dishes or taking a shower or walking down the street. There are four basic elements. One is paying attention. Number two is on purpose. Number three is in the present moment. And number four is with acceptance, also considered non-judgment. The secular interest in science with regard to brain changes, changes in the central nervous system, are important, but they're relatively primitive. Now, they've only been going on in earnest for about 30 or 40 years, although during that time there's been remarkable evidence to show that this stuff really does influence neuroplasticity, which is a fancy way of saying the brain can change itself. We can also develop spiritually and emotionally on our own in ways that change the brain by paying attention to maladaptive default habits of mind, recognizing that they're happening, that actually opens up the ability for the brain to reorganize itself, to attach to other neural networks instead of the networks staying isolated from one another.
So let me ask a question here. So when we are paying attention and we're doing things differently and not doing it on autopilot, that's contributing to neuroplasticity, laying down new pathways, and that has some connection with brain health and other healthy functions. Is that correct?
Not only some connection, but it's actually the way the brain changes itself.
Are there nuances about in the present moment that you would like to add?
One study I read said was estimating that 80% of our thoughts are either about the past or about the future. So if you took a cross-section of your mind moment by moment during the day, you would find that most of the time you're really not paying attention to what's going on in the present. And if you're paying attention to the past, quite often those are thoughts of sorrow and regret, making you unhappy. And if you're paying attention to the future, you're having thoughts that are causing you anxiety. And not only are you creating these unhappy mind states for yourself, but you're really missing out on what is going on right in front of you in the moment.
So help me understand the significance of without judgment and reactivity as part of the definition of mindfulness. What is the importance and purpose of that?
This is as hard for people to understand and grasp as it is that You can practice meditation even though thoughts interfere. But it's difficult to catch on to. By acceptance or non-judgment, what we refer to is not approving of the thought that you have, or the pain that you feel, or the stress that you're under, nor disapproving of it, because neither one of those is going to help us. And so what we want to do is practice seeing it for what it is. Practice just simply recognizing it. Have an intention not to have another thought about the thought and another thought about that thought and carrying on into a 20-minute daydream. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is just teach ourselves to learn how to notice something without judging it.
So being mindful and not being judgmental means totally focusing in on the experience and then saving that judgment for another time. It's not part of the mindfulness experience.
You said it better than I.
If I was to engage in mindful practices and I followed the research that we have, the evidence, what are some of the health benefits I might experience?
There's an increased ability to develop an improved capacity for resilience. Mm-hmm. You know, life is full of stress, but it's also full of recovery. We're awake all day and we sleep all night. We're awake again, we sleep again. Up and down, up and down. We're stressed and we recover. We're stressed and we recover. And one of the primary ways that mindfulness and specifically meditation, although other forms of practice as well, help us is through building the capacity for resilience and recovery.
So that's interesting. This ancient practice is an antidote curing or helping to cure some of the ills of our modern life.
And the cure is to not suffer from it. That's something we learn from the spiritual aspects of mindfulness, and that is, it doesn't take the pain away from chronic knee pain or cancer pain, but we don't suffer from it as much. We see it for what it is. We develop a mood of equanimity toward it, and we can live with it, with less suffering and resilience.
It seems as if it's almost hard for some people to separate the spiritual benefits of mindfulness from the other benefits we've already talked about. So could one of you address the spiritual benefits for our listeners?
I think that, some people are really drawn to spiritual inquiry, and that leads them to questions like, who am I? Who are we? What are human beings? What is this world that we find ourselves thrust into? And is it possible to find meaning and happiness on a consistent basis in this very life? As Cliff was saying, suffering, why do I suffer? What is it that really is the cause of the suffering that I experience? Being able to distinguish between pain, which is inevitable in our lives, and suffering, which is the way that we react to that physical, unavoidable pain is really where the suffering comes from.
Well, one of the things is I'm a pragmatist, and we love to leave our listeners with specific, actionable, and attainable recommendations. Gentlemen, what are your recommendations to our listeners about mindfulness?
The first thing I would say is find a group or a teacher. And there are lots. Mm-hmm. You might start with your yoga teacher and move on from there. You might start with John. You might start with your family physician or other healthcare providers.
There are a lot of resources, and people could Google or use other search methods to find how to get involved in mindfulness. But it's like when my son aspired to be a pitcher, we got him a pitching coach. Listeners, I want to remind you that all episodes of Health Connections are available on the WUOT website for on-demand listening. So if this has piqued your interest about brain science, there are past episodes and many, many other episodes for your listening pleasure. Gentlemen, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to have this discussion with you today.
Thank you,
Carol.